Okay, so we're here with Antonio Leroy King, aka the King, aka King, aka Bless Up. How are you?
I love that. And can I say I love that you pronounced my middle name correctly? Because nobody does that.
Can I? People say Leroy.
People say Leroy all the time, like I'm a 65-year-old deacon at a church, and I can't stand it.
Can I tell you, you don't feel like a Leroy. Your energy doesn't feel like, your energy feels like a Leroy.
Right.
Period. Okay. Because I am.
You are King Leroy. Like, for me, people have been fucking up my name my whole life. My name's David. People call me David. To be fair, it's spelled David, but like David, it's David, like Leroy. It's not Leroy. It's not David.
Right.
People say David. People call me Dave.
D.
People call me D. It's so funny.
Rick Ellis called
the only person I will ever allow to call me D is Rick Ellis.
Okay. He's
the only person. But people call me David. David. That's hard to say. That's hard to say.
You know, we could talk for hours about names because, well, first of all, so I just found out a few years ago that I'm part French. My great-grandmother was from France. It's funny because my name is Antonio Leroy King. And so my name is Antonio the King King, because Leroy means the king.
Right.
Exactly. But so do you want to hear my name story? Would you like to hear that?
Hey, oui, bon ami.
Hey. Okay. Listen, so here's the thing. So my dad's name is Antonio Leroy King.
Okay. Period. Oh, so you're named after your father.
I'm named after my father. So my full name is Antonio Leroy King II.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Don't call me Junior. I'm not a junior. You can have that. You can keep it in your pocket. My name is not Junior. Do not try to be cute and call me Junior. I'm not that. So all of the firstborn sons in my family have our dad's names. Mm-hmm. So there's a big Lamont, a little Lamont. There's a big Edward. There's a little Edward. There's a big Lars, a little Lars. And so my dad, when he met my mom, and was introduced to my mom by my uncle, because my mom's the only girl. You see what I'm saying? So I don't have my mother's name, obviously, I have my dad's name. And so when he introduced himself to my mom, he hated being called Tony growing up. He hated being called Tony. So he introduced himself as King to my mom. So when I came out the womb, I was called King. So that's the reason why I introduced myself as King, because when you've been called King since like the beginning of time, King feels like more of my name than Antonio.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, another reason why I love to be called King is because I can't stand being called Anthony.
No, Anthony. No.
Okay. I can't stand people have called me Anthony. People have called me Antoine. People have called me Antoinette. I've been called everything under the sun other than Antonio. Someone will literally have my name in front of them and still say Anthony.
Why? That makes no sense to me.
Because people don't read, girl. People don't read.
Well, but they are reading it and they choose to say the incorrect name.
Selective reading. Yes. When I write work emails, I sign it David. I get a reply back. Hey, David.
It's so awful. Well, for me, so my name is Gianna, but I go by Gia. But some people call me Gina. And I'm like, no, I'm not Gina. Like, I don't feel like a Gina.
Yeah. What people don't understand is when you call us the wrong name, that name belongs to another person's life, their experiences. Like, I have not experienced the life of Anthony. Like, I have not. You have not experienced the life of Gina. No. That's a whole other person. That's a whole other woman somewhere.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's not the brand that we've all worked very hard to
figure out.
Not for other people, but for ourselves. You know, that's most
for ourselves. Yes.
Do you know who Dominic Scaglione Jr. is?
I think I've heard that name. I think I have.
So he's wonderful.
Yeah. So he's amazing, and he was a two-show Frankie on Broadway. So back in the day. They had a 6-show Frankie and a 2-show Frankie.
Okay.
Because it literally is one of the hardest, like top 3 hardest male musical theater roles ever. So,
absolutely.
And they don't do it now, unfortunately. And it makes things really hard. And, you know, everyone right now who's playing Frankie, like John Hacker, bless him. Aaron yeah. DeJesus, bless him.
The best.
The guy doing I forgot the name of the guy who's doing it in the West UK, End. Yeah. Bless him. Mm-hmm. So, but there used to be a two show Frankie. So he wrote a show called Scrooge Play. It was an Italian version of Scrooge, of the Christmas Carol. But his name was Anthony Scungarelli. Mm-hmm. And
Anthony Scungarelli.
Scungarelli. So, and Andy Carl was in it. And so the whole thing happened at Birdland over the holidays. Mm-hmm. And Orfei was there. And so we introduced ourselves after, and I was like, hey, I'm David. She's like, oh, David.
Yeah.
Not David, but David.
Right.
It really is.
Mm-hmm. If our face does it like that, that's a term of endearment.
Exactly.
There you go.
No, I was sure. I was like, you can say my name like that however you want.
Listen, and we love Orfei. We love her.
Brand. We love her. But it has to do with the brand. Like, you're Antonio, not Anthony. Not Antoine, not Antoinette.
Right.
You know, you're Gia.
Right, and you're Gia, king, not prince.
You're king, not...
And I'm king, not prince.
Hey, that's the king, not prince, with Antonio Leroy King.
That's it. Great. Mm-hmm. Yes, but we do love Prince, though.
We do love...
We love Prince.
We love Prince, and we love Michael Jackson.
Yes.
Yes.
And we saw your TikTok.
We saw your TikTok.
We'll talk about that a little bit later. Yes.
We'll talk about... Okay. We'll
so here we have Antonio Leroy King, who plays Barry Belson, Hal Miller, and others in the Jersey Boys national tour going around the country.
Right now.
He's on a little bit of a break. He's in Indianapolis.
That's right.
Is that okay that I said that?
No, that's fine. Please. Okay. Yeah, okay. That's fine.
Does he know where you
are? Listen, I don't think they'll find me here.
So he's in Indianapolis on a little bit of a layover, and we're so happy to have you here, man.
Yes, thank you so
much. Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
And you just got a really sick tattoo today.
I did. So excuse the, you know, the bare chest a little bit, but I'm a little in pain. So I'm letting some air hit it just a little bit.
Well, hey, if you need to take a Tylenol during the recording, please do.
Already done.
Oh, man.
But we are here to talk about you and get to know so much more about you. And the thing is, if you follow King on Instagram or TikTok and you listen to other podcasts that he's done, King, you really are so insightful and so wise. Like, just, and we just can't wait to talk
and
to
you're
so
about
everything.
Thank you. And transparent, you know, I think those things are what we love and what we are drawn to about you. You're just so upfront.
Thank you.
Transparent with how you feel, with your faith, with God. And I think that really means a lot to us too.
It's true.
And I love that. Thank you.
Of course. Yes. Well, we want to thank you for everything you're doing for Jersey Boys. And you really are leaving an amazing legacy in your work so far. I know it's only been a few months, about 6 months now, right?
This is actually for everyone. This is his second time in Belleville.
Pretty cool.
This is his second time in Belleville because in Phoenix Theater, he did Jersey Boys with current cast member Justin Allbinder and Jersey Boys legend Marissa Haddad. She plays.
Yes.
She is legend. And she's also
legendary.
Following her whole IVF story on her social media. So So it's the second time in the old neighborhood.
Yes.
I tell you what, that Marissa, that's a woman. Okay. And I'm gonna just leave it at that. Respectfully. That's a woman right there, respectfully. I love her.
Yes, well, please check her out too, everybody.
On the social, she's the IVF wife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. She's amazing.
Legend.
Yes. But let's go back to your early years, if we can, for a bit.
Okay.
Oink, oink. Not oink, oink, but oink, oink.
We thought it was...
I'm shocked.
Got the question.
I didn't know we were going there. I was
so
that's our song.
Oh, what a nice. C'est soir, I love French. Number one in
I'm like, I needed Noah. I needed Noah, our conductor, to let me know when to come in. I didn't know. I didn't know where we was going.
I need a conductor cam, please.
Yes. It's so funny. Well, little silhouette insight for everybody. So when we send our rundowns to all of our guests and we talk about their life before Jersey Boys, we have the subtitle, The Early Years of Scrapbook.
In the scene selection and in the song numbers, it says, especially in the cast recording, it says Early Years of Scrapbook. So
That's it. Yeah. The floor is yours. So if you can tell, like, where and how you grew up, and when did you catch the theater bug?
Ooh, child. And if you need me to speed it up or wrap it up, give me the numbers or start playing some music like the Oscars or something, because I'll keep going. I was born on December 31st, 1992. My birthday is New Year's Eve.
Uh-huh. My grandfather, rest in peace, also.
Aww. Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah, I was born at 12:06 a.m. on New Year's Eve. And see, I'm already like giving too much detail, so I should probably get through it because we're gonna be here all night. I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana. We're known for our corn. I grew up here in the Midwest. And I started acting when I was about 6, I think, professionally. But I mean, I was singing in church. I think I started singing in church around like 5. I'm from a big Black Southern church going family. So my grandfather was a deacon. My uncle's a pastor. I have another uncle who's a pastor. My mom worked in the church. I did vacation Bible school every year of my childhood. First year. Oh, you know about vacation Bible school?
Well, I don't know what vacation Bible. So I'm Jewish. So we have our own versions of you know, like Sunday school. And so we have school. I know what Sunday school is, and I know about, but I don't know what vacation.
Please tell us.
Well, let me tell you. So vacation Bible school is an old staple in the Christian church. So basically what you do is for 1 week, and I'm sure other churches do it different, but for my church, I went to Greater Gethsemane Missionary Baptist Church on Martin Luther King Jr. Street. And it's like a week where, how can I put it? Imagine like a week long Bible study. So every night you would come together and the kids would have Bible study in their age group, the adults would have Bible study in their age group. Normally there's a meal, and then normally there's games and there's prizes you can win. It's almost like a Bible school carnival, if you will, kind of for about a week. You do arts and crafts, you go to the Hobby Lobby, and you get your Elmer's Elmer's glue.
I know Hobby Lobby.
That's a field trip.
There you go. You get your popsicle sticks.
It's kind of like summer camp.
It's a summer camp. No, really, it really is. It's a Bible study summer camp. And so my mom taught that every year of my life. I went every year of my life. My dad is an amazing cook, so he would cook the food at the church with the other church ladies. And so I said all that to say, I just grew up in church. So I grew up around a lot of the arts. So I grew up dancing in church, singing in church. And I started dancing when I was about 8. And I kind of just did everything. My parents, I like to say I don't have theater parents because they really don't know nothing about nothing unless I tell them, but they kind of pushed me to whatever was there. So I did any type of arts thing you can think of in school, I did it, especially if it was free. So I did the choir, I did chamber choir, I did men's choir, I did show choir, which I'm from Indianapolis. So the Midwest show choir is, it's
solid.
So Glee depicts it right.
Mm-hmm. Glee, okay, so here's the thing, because I don't know if y'all know this. So Ryan Murphy, who created Glee, went to school in Indiana. Okay. And the high school that is like the big rival high school of the New Directions, which is the one that Lea Michele was in and Amber Riley, that school is based on Carmel High School, which is like 15 minutes from me.
No way.
Carmel High, the Vocal Adrenaline, that's their
Vocal Adrenaline, yes. They are loosely based on them. So imagine me in high school in 2009 and 2010 watching Glee and having to be us. We lost our everlasting minds because we were like, wow, this is like depicting us and what we do, until the show started going for season 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and it started going off the rails. We ain't got to talk about that. Yeah, I just did everything. I did Aida. I did Guys and Dolls. I did Children of Eden. I did Seussical. Like every, you know, I was Donkey and Shrek. You know, I did the community theater stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I just did it all. And then I went to college. I went to the University of Southern Indiana in Evansville, Indiana, which is not too far from where I'm from. And I majored in theater. So I was there for 4 years and I had an amazing time, but also it was very difficult, if I'm being honest, because it was a big culture shock because I went to a predominantly Black preschool, elementary school, middle school, high school, and then went to maybe a 97% white college university. Mm-hmm. And I was actually the only Black male theater major for 2.5 years. Yes. So anything that you can think of that one would experience, I definitely experienced some form of it. So it was difficult, but I survived. I was the lead in a bunch of productions, which was a blessing. And then I graduated, and unlike what my professor told me to do, because he said, you know, if you don't move to New York right away, you'll fail. He literally said that to me.
Really?
And yeah, and hindsight, you know, what did they say? Hindsight is 20/20 or something like that. Because I understand where he was coming from now, because being from the Midwest, normally you meet somebody by the age of 20, you get married, and then you start having babies like right away. And people who are talented oftentimes get scared. They don't want to move to New York or LA. And they, I wouldn't dare say they settle, because, you know, it's whatever they choose is what's right for them. But a lot of people don't go forward with being an actor after they've majored in it in the Midwest, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And especially with my college university, it's a growing college. It's still growing. So I didn't go to Carnegie Mellon where they literally are like, we'll get you on Broadway in under 2 years. You know what I mean? And like, they have a very clear through line of how you can get there and you have access to that. I went to school surrounded by corn, you know? So I just didn't feel I was ready and I didn't listen to him. And I'm so grateful to God I didn't, because I just kind of got my feet wet and did as much theater as I could in my hometown where I felt comfortable. And then when I moved to LA, nobody could tell me that I wasn't talented or that I wasn't prepared. My resume was looking good. I felt really prepared. You know, I don't know, God forbid, had I moved to New York right away and been surrounded by several families of rats and roaches, I don't know what I would have done. I probably would have went back to Indianapolis screaming, you know? So as I said, I can talk, can I? So please, like.
I'd love to jump off of something that you said and actually kind of goes to something. So everyone, please go listen to this other podcast that King did. It's called Jesus Plus Juliet. He did it back in, I think it was October of 2020, I think.
Yes.
He
in the midst of darkness.
It was an amazing episode. Yeah. And we'll put it in the link in the description when this episode comes out. But you talked about how the hard times we go through are not punishments dealt out from God.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like because you did something, because you didn't move to New York, he's not right away, he's not punishing you, but it's God showing you that what your path will eventually be. What you said, hindsight is 20/20. There's mm-hmm. a story in the Old Testament, in the Torah, that I really like, that I would like to share with you.
Please do.
I think I've told you this one. So the Jews are about to go into the land of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And Moses says to God, I'm having a really tough time. Show me your face. Mm-hmm. And God's like, I can't show you my face because you will surely die. But I'll show you my back. And what does that mean? God doesn't have a back. God doesn't have a face. God is. He's
right.
He is.
Mm-hmm.
But what he was saying was, listen, Moses, you're going through a lot of shit right now, of course. But looking back, once things clear, looking back, you'll know why you had to go through this, why you had to do this, why you had
absolutely.
To
go. I think absolutely. Yeah. I love that. You better take us to church.
I'll take you to the synagogue too.
He said, those of you who have your Torahs,
yeah.
you need to chapter, yes. listen. I was about to start humming.
Exactly.
Don't get me started.
When I heard that analogy, that insight, I just immediately pocketed it away.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's so good. And there's something else that you said, because you mentioned that you were the only Black person for 2.5 years in your program. You said mm-hmm. on the podcast, because you cannot add actual human bodies to create diversity, I think it's important to educate what Black people have done in theater to those white students.
Right.
So how can these educators be trained to be able to educate effectively and respectfully?
Yeah.
I'm so happy you asked me that. So I'm gonna say a little like metaphor, I guess, that I just thought of, and then I'll tie it back to that. So I love skincare.
Uh-huh.
I love skincare is my thing. I'm the skincare king. Okay. And I've been looking for a new sunscreen. I've been looking for a new sunscreen that don't turn me purple and don't make me look like Casper the Ghost. Like it's a thing for Black people trying to find a good sunscreen.
Wow.
And so I was looking up a sunscreen that I've been looking into, and it's called Black Girl Sunscreen. That's the name of the brand.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a Black owned business.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was looking at the packaging and I thought to myself, it's unfortunate because people who are not Black will look at this and think that they cannot use it. So they won't buy it. They will not research it. They will not see how great the benefits are. They will not see where those Black women came from and probably what they had to go through to get that business on shelves in Target. A lot of people, when they don't see themselves, they kind of don't even knock on the door. They don't even begin to do the research. They don't even begin to think that this is a space for me. And that's all people. That's not just like people who are not Black. That's all people. And so what I was telling my friend on that podcast, because she was having an issue with, she's a teacher and she had an all white class and she was trying to make one of her students feel more comfortable who was Black. And I told her, as you said, I said, well, if you can't actually get bodies into the show or into the room, it's very, very important for those students to know that just because you don't see Black people in the room, or just because you may not always listen to Black musicals, or just because you don't think there's a space for you in the musical Dreamgirls, it don't mean you shouldn't research it.
Right.
It don't mean that you shouldn't know the history of African-Americans and Black people in theater. It doesn't mean that you should, it always, if I could be real, because we could be real, right? We're going to be real.
Please.
I always find it so interesting how if you ask an average Black person who is, I don't know, Scarlett Johansson, who is Meryl Streep, who is Julie Andrews, a lot of Black people will know who those white people are. And why is that? It's because we see them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with Black history. Same thing with white history. We're taught that in schools. Whereas if you ask a Black person, who is this right here? They don't know who Maya Angelou is. They don't know who Josephine Baker is. They don't know who Gregory Hines is. And these are people who have contributed so much to the craft of poetry, music, theater. Basically, I said all that to say is, even if you can't create the diversity, like even if you can't get Black bodies or brown bodies or Asian bodies in your conservatory, in your classroom, it's very important to teach them still what those people have contributed to the craft, because it deserves to be seen.
So how can these educators teach it effectively and respectfully?
You show them good representation of it. So for perfect example, I was an elementary school teacher in LA for about 2 years at a public school, and then I taught at a private school. And I had a pretty okay mixed class, a dance class. I had maybe like, I had two mixed kids. They were mixed with Black, so they were Black. I had, I think, an Asian girl, and then the rest were white. So like 15 of them were white. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's not good. But considering it was a private school,
right,
you know, in Sherman Oaks, California, very rich private school, that was okay.
Right.
And I made a conscious decision to show them all types of artwork. So every day when we would come in for class, they thought we were going to get on the floor and just start stretching and just, I was going to let them dance around the room. I said, no. Today we're going to watch a clip from The Wiz. Today we're going to watch a clip from Dreamgirls. Today we're going to watch a clip from Miss Saigon. Today we're going to watch a clip from Fela. And you should have seen these little kids' eyes just open up. It's just something they had not even begun to understand. You wouldn't believe how many of those kids had never seen Brandy as Cinderella. I almost had a heart attack.
The Sin.
Or Toni Braxton.
Yeah. I'm telling you, it was blasphemy. I said, y'all don't know Whitney in the, you don't know? They don't know because they haven't been shown it.
Right.
To answer your question, because I know I'm so long-winded.
No.
To answer your question, I think that if you can't actually get bodies in there, show those kids Black stuff. Show them Latino stuff. Show them Asian stuff. And also, I say to white people all the time, and I even joke about it, just because a show is what we consider an all-Black show, don't mean you can't like it. Everybody should watch Insecure by Issa Rae.
It's a genius. So good. Yes.
I tell people, you haven't watched that? And they're like, no, you know, I just thought. And I'm like, what did you think? Go ahead and say it. What did you think? Because it's a masterpiece. Everybody should watch it. So anyway, that's how I feel about that. I'm getting hot.
No, honestly, we appreciate you answering the question because we know that like it's tricky because it's like, no one should have to educate us. Like we should educate ourselves on the topic. And I feel
absolutely
like that's a huge disconnect that a lot of white people have, you know?
Well, I would argue that's probably been the biggest hurdle and the biggest cause to the lack of diversity in theater in general, because if you continually do white things or white shows or predominantly white shows, and then you don't cast that many POCs in it, you're not, frankly, people create the same mistakes over and over and over and over and over again until they don't, you know? And so it's absolutely not a Black person's job to educate anybody on Black history at all. But unfortunately, a lot of people, because there's not a Black person in the room for them to ask, what do you think about this? They continue to make the wrong mistakes, you know? So it's unfortunate, but I personally, for me, being somebody who was the only Black person in my college university, I had roommates in LA where I was the only Black person, and now I'm in a show where I'm the only Black person. I'm very careful with protecting my peace and not feeling the need to teach African-American history 101. But there are times, I have to admit, where I say, you know what? This is an educational moment for someone who I think is genuine, who genuinely wants to know. Yeah. And it may make it easier for somebody behind me who comes into the room, you know? So that's one reason, that's one reason why I feel so blessed to be talking to y'all right now, because hopefully this will continue conversations. Hopefully somebody will see this and they'll remember next time they choose a season of shows to do, you know, in their regional theater or in a high school, they'll think, what is a way that we can make this inclusive? Because ultimately, I think Misty Copeland said, without diversity, nothing is sustainable. So.
Right.
And if you don't know who Misty Copeland is, you need to research her.
Oh, of course. Love her. And you also said, you know, diversity is not just Black people either. There's so many people. So with new shows, because like, there is definitely a bigger effort to try to make like more like shows being more diverse, but it does seem very forced at the same time, you know? So,
it definitely can be.
What feels forced to you and what feels genuine? Like, do you have an example for both? I'm just curious.
That's a good question. I definitely have that same question.
Yay.
What feels forced and what feels genuine? I'll tell you what feels forced and what feels genuine. I think, and I've talked about this a little bit on my TikTok, it's part of the reason why I have a love-hate relationship with revivals, because with revivals, you're taking a show that literally had not an ounce of diversity or the backstory of Black people or people of color. There were no people of color in the room. It was in a time where, let's say you're doing a musical like My Fair Lady. That was during a time when literally there was legal separation of people in the United States. And so when you take that show, I'm just using My Fair Lady as an example. And if you take My Fair Lady and you want to put it on Broadway today or put it on tour today or do it in a regional theater, and you throw in a few Black people, or you throw in a few Asian people, or you throw in a few Latino people, and you have them saying lines that were originally written for a non-person of color, that is where you cross into it feeling like tokenism. That's where you cross into it feeling forced. That's where you cross into it feeling honestly uncomfortable, because you know that these lines are not coming from the heart and soul of the person who is saying it. You know what I mean? Anyone can act. Like, we've seen actors play all kinds of roles, and we've seen it switched. We've seen Black people play roles that are normally played by white women, and they do amazing. We have Brittany, who's in Wicked right now. Mm-hmm. And it's glorious. It sounds amazing.
Thank God they gave her a new wig, by the way.
Oh my.
Because did you see that video that someone posted of like her first performance? That nappy wig that they had.
You gonna get me in trouble talking about a wig. Listen, you gonna get me in trouble here. I'm trying to be good. Now, let me finish that thought. So basically, let me finish that thought. So that is where you get into it feeling like tokenism and it feeling uncomfortable, and where you feel it was not genuine. You know, genuine diversity is when it is inclusive, when there is an effort in making sure everyone feels seen and everyone feels heard. And when there are multiple people's opinions that matter, you know, because I also sometimes have an issue with when people, you know, you read playbill.com and you see that there's a new musical coming up, and let's say it's written by a white person and it's about a subject matter that's inherently Black. It is not enough for you to ask your one Black friend their opinion, because that one Black friend does not speak for all African Americans or all Black people. There has to be an effort in making sure that the entire, and I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying it's easy at all. It's absolutely not a quick fix, but it's not a quick fix because there have been generations and generations of doing the wrong thing. And so it's very important to me that more than just one Black person. This is part of the reason why I personally sometimes don't like educating, because I need to make it abundantly clear I am not all Black people. There are so many Black people who feel differently than me. There's so many Black people who were raised differently than me. And so when I see, so let me give you an example. When I see a production like, I don't know. I honestly can't give an example that's coming to me right now where a show that's inherently white has changed it and made it inclusive. Because ultimately, I think that a lot of the new works that are coming that are POC filled and have LGBTQIA, they're amazing. So those are the ones that have my attention right now. I don't know if I've seen an inherently white show throw in a Black person and enjoy it or be okay about it.
So I think what you're saying is there have to be people on both sides of the table. behind the table on the creative team and also in the cast. Mm-hmm. So like Carousel with Josh Henry, it was, what? So what do you think? Because I think that was, definitely predominantly all white show that mm-hmm. was Rodgers and Hammerstein. It was choreographed by, I think, Justin Peck. I mean, Josh Henry was playing Billy Bigelow and Carousel. But also the creative team was also not predominantly POC. There were mm-hmm. a lot of POC in the cast. So I don't know, like, what do you feel about that one?
For that particular production,
he was phenomenal.
First of all, he's phenomenal. Like, yeah. He's an amazing talent. No one can take that away from him. Yeah. But that was absolutely an example of a show, as I said, that was completely, absolutely not written for anyone who looks like him or has had his experience.
Yeah.
And so when you place a Black man in that role and you don't really see, this is why I think it's so important to speak to multiple people when you try to do things like sure. diversify a show. Because I would imagine that some Black person, or maybe 5, or maybe 10, or 15, or 25, would have told them, hey, it might not be a good idea to have this hugely buff Black man playing this role where he beats his white wife. This may not be, I get what you're trying to do. Mm-hmm. I get that you're trying to diversify. I get that you're trying to make right of what's been done wrong, but this might not be the one.
It also doesn't paint Black people in the best way.
Yes.
It resorts to stereotypes. It resorts to
absolutely
things that people see on TV. And
absolutely.
It's the opposite of what's intended.
Exactly.
Exactly. Right. Or, yeah. I just thought of an example. So the Gershwin's production of Porgy and Bess with Audra McDonald and Norm Lewis, mm-hmm. that was a production that was written by white people that a lot of Black people felt for years was heavily stereotypical and showed us in a negative light. And for the remounting of it with Audra and with Norm Lewis, they brought in Susan Laurie Parks, mm-hmm. who is, I mean, I don't know if you get any better than her.
Yeah.
You know? And she brought in her wealth of knowledge of Blackness and Black theater and Black stereotypes and things like that. And she had Black, you know, collaborators and things like that. I would say that is an example of taking a show that was maybe not written so much for Black people or celebrating the Black experience that they did it right, in my opinion. Some people may not think so, but I think that was an example of how they did it right.
I like that.
Yeah, well, thank you for sharing. And yeah. I'm also thinking of Cheaper by the Dozen on Disney Plus. They did a remake of it with Gabrielle Union.
Yeah.
So, yes. And that was interesting. Like, it still felt a little forced to me, mm-hmm. but I liked it because it was a blended family. So it wasn't as obvious as like, hey, like, we're just going to totally revamp this. Like, so they kept it honest in more ways than less ways.
You want to know what felt forced? What felt forced was Sex and the City and Just Like That on HBO.
You think? Mm. Yeah.
That's what, did y'all watch that?
Yes, of course.
That, to me, felt extremely forced. Did I enjoy it? Absolutely. Did I watch every episode? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But that was outlandishly forced. It literally felt like the writers went into the room and said, so y'all, we didn't have no Black people in the show before. We can't make that mistake again. Let's throw in 3. That's what it felt like to me, you know.
And also let's throw in trans. Let's throw in this.
Let's throw in we have to have a trans character. Throw one in there. We'll just have them pop up somewhere. And it was like, okay, I see the effort. I see what you're doing, but it's a little on the nose. Yeah. Just a little bit.
Well, I feel like hopefully for now it's like people are really trying to make the effort. Sometimes it lands, sometimes it doesn't.
Absolutely.
I think the main thing is just to have new stories that were created from the get-go with a diverse group of people.
Exactly. That is what I preach to my students all the time, to take out your pen and paper and write. You have to write your own stories, because that is the surest way that you're going to see yourself on stage, and that is the surest way you're going to inspire so many people. That's how we have great shows now, because people were writing from whence they came. You know what I mean? That's why Jersey Voice is so great. You know,
well, I've been thinking about this a lot lately, because I'm very, very Italian. And, right. But so for me, you know, I grew up with, you know, with prosciutto, with my whole, with all the food that I eat, with like, with growing up with mob movies. And to me, that is like, that was cinema growing up for me. Like that right. was everything. Right. Jersey Boys was, oh my God, this is the biggest show. It's Italian. It's amazing. But it really is only a slice, pun intended. I will say, like, Luca on Disney Plus, for example, I can't get through it. I really don't think they depicted Italian people well. I really think people don't take Italian stories seriously. Mm. I think we're definitely a stereotype. The difference is that, like, Italian people, like, they totally like lean into it, and it's very funny. Mm. But of course, not Italian people feel this way or grew up that way. And whether Italian American or whether you're like actually from Italy or Sicily. So I think that's definitely something that should be discussed too. Because so here's the thing, also just for me generally, none of my friends like musicals. I always have to force them to see it. Like none of them have even seen
it. Oh, you're the only one?
Pretty much, yeah. Except for my one friend Brianna, who's also Italian, love you. She loves Jersey Boys. Uh-huh. But it's so challenging to get people to one, just come, just go and see it, just because I overhype it, which is another separate problem. But two, it's like, they feel that they know the story already. You know what I mean?
I've seen good films. I don't need to see Jersey Boys.
Exactly. Because that's how it's said. And I'm like, no, this is like.
I can see that.
Right?
It's like, I've seen Fiddler on the Roof. I don't need to see Unorthodox.
Right. Exactly.
It's the same with Jews. That's exactly it. It's the same with Jews. It's like, people, you know, people ask me all the time, oh, have you seen Fiddler on the Roof? Or have you seen this? Or people ask Gia, have you seen Goodfellas? Have you seen... It's like, obviously we've seen it, but like, that's not, we're more than just the sum of our parts.
Right. Exactly. So that's what podcasts are for. Mm-hmm. Talk about this in depth. And now I also want to make this very clear too. Rick Ellis and Marsha Brickman are geniuses.
Yeah.
They did their homework. They knew exactly what they were doing. And the reason why we have this podcast is because of their writing. And you don't even need the music. The book itself is genius and it tells the story.
I agree.
It could be a play. You take out all the music, still a fucking amazing play.
Yes, and it's because they really, like, to every detail, because we always say with Jersey Boys, like, the older you get and the more shit you go through, everything can be boiled down to one scene, one line, or one moment of blocking in Jersey Boys.
Right.
It's with relationships, with friendships, with money, with everything. And that's why we love this show. And I think when people finally see it, they get it.
They're,
you know?
It's so hard.
Yeah. Like you were saying, King, with the sunscreen, like people won't even knock on the door. Same thing with Jersey Boys. People don't even like, of course, it's still one of those popular shows ever.
It's true.
But there are, but if you haven't seen it in the past 15 years, it's hard to get new people to go see it.
Right.
Truly, it's true. But also, there becomes like an imbalance kind of when it comes to theater as a whole, because when it comes to like Black representation in musicals that could educate, it's always such a very, very small slice of a Black experience. And a lot of times it's not 100% accurate of what a lot of Black people feel or have gone through. And so I think, I'm trying to imagine myself, like if I was, say, a white person who went into Fiddler on the Roof or went into Mamma Mia or went into Les Miserables, I would assume that because there is so much representation of non-POC people, that's probably the reason why a lot of people think they know what Jersey Boys is gonna be. Because there are so many examples, you know, there's Goodfellas, there's A Bronx Tale, there's, you know, there's just-
Even Beautiful, a little bit like that.
What'd you say?
Even Beautiful has an Italian element to it.
Yeah, Even Beautiful, you know? So I think that might be kind of the downside of even spreading yourself thin a little bit too much. You know what I mean? Like having too much of like a certain aspect of that culture, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I hear you. Yeah, and I think that's it all goes to I have to quote Lady Gaga, you know, because she always talks about how like, you know, the devil is a snake and it tries to divide everybody, you know, but it's important to know as a whole, you know, like not like just no one person is the same. That's what everyone needs to remember.
Truly.
That's really that's truly all I'm trying to, that's true. You know, and as long as like I feel, and this is just so fucked up to say, but I feel like now people have more of a morality checklist that nobody had before. I feel like now we have things where, like, so we know that if we, like, this is one way to go, to take that extra step that no one knew about that step earlier, you know? So I feel like we have more tools in our toolkit now where we just know to ask questions. Cause before, if you didn't know, like if you just
right.
as it was, that's it. You know, you know what you know. But now we know so much more. So I feel like
absolutely. And I think that the first step, this is what I was telling my friend on the other podcast, you know, you have to have empathy for everybody and you have to know kind of like the levels. And I'll give you an example. So Cynthia Erivo, child. Cicely Tyson. Cicely Tyson was doing an interview with a white woman. And the white woman was asking her about her career and how hard it's been and this, that, and the third. And Cicely said, "Do you know what a ladder is?" And she said, "Excuse me?" And she said, "Do you know what a ladder is?" And she said, "Yes." And she said, "Okay, let me explain to you my ladder in my life. At the top, it's white man. Below it, it's white woman. Below that, it's black man. At the very bottom of the ladder, on the ground, it's black women." And so I say all that to say, even when, and I'm absolutely not saying that you two are saying this at all, but I've absolutely heard a lot of people, because diversity is like the new thing now, it's like the new hip thing, there is a large population of white theater people who are saying things like, "Oh, it's so hard for me to get into an audition now. Right. It's so hard for me to like, you know, I don't have brown hair, so you know, I can't get in the room. They're going black with this, or they're going Latina with this." And I just sit there and I laugh, because even in the small, super small, so I'll use you as an example, even in the small amount of accurate Italian representation, it's still so much more than Asians. You know, for Asian Americans, we have what, Miss Saigon?
Pacific
Flower Overture. Flower Drum Song.
And
that's
Burning Red. We have one. There's one Disney movie, but
yeah. You have one. Now listen, I ain't watched that yet. I am so excited to watch that. I am so hyped to watch it.
You'll love it.
I love Sandra Oh. I love me some Sandra Oh. I love her.
But Pacific Overture and Flower Drum Song, they're so offensive.
The King and I.
King and I, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
I caution people to just remember, even like open your mind and think about that ladder for other people. The minute you're going to complain about, you know, "I'm a white straight man and I can't get in for this musical," just everybody, if you trust your gift and if you trust in God, there's room for everybody. Everybody's going to eat. Everybody's dreams are going to come true in some way. Everybody's going to get to be seen in some way. You will not, I promise to God, white people, you are not in danger, because you still, even though inclusivity may feel like the hot thing right now, you are still so far in front of everybody else. So absolutely check yourself when you say things like, "Oh, well, I won't be seen for this," or "I can't be seen for this because, you know, my whiteness is counting against me," especially when you're in the dressing room. Because that's a lot, the dressing room talk, you hear a lot of that. Because people go to auditions and things like that. And it's like, okay, respectfully, check your privilege. There's a show called Little Fires Everywhere on Hulu. with Kerry Washington and Reese Witherspoon. And there's a scene where Reese Witherspoon's character says, you know, I'm a good mother, I make good choices. And Kerry Washington says, you had good choices. You did not just wake up and make good choices, you had good choices. Right. And that is exactly the situation we are in when it comes to theater and when it comes to inclusivity and diversity. At least you have choices.
Right.
At least you have choices. And not to like skip around or, you know, move the conversation, but honest to God, that's one of the reasons why I love jukebox musicals. Because jukebox musicals.
Are you calling them jukebox?
I said what I said.
You said that on your TikTok.
I mean, wait, no, yeah, I was. I just remembered Thunder.
Don't you come for me?
I didn't mean to interrupt you. It just threw me for a second. It was really funny. I said
Mott's apple juice jukebox. Yes, that's what I said.
I love it. I love
that's
it.
What I'm, I said. So, I'm sticking
I'm
to it.
So sorry. Please.
No, you're fine. But no, that's part of the reason why I love jukebox musicals, because at least they give Black people a chance to be seen. At least they give us a chance to relive some of our glory days, you know, with Michael Jackson and Tina Turner. You know, you could absolutely argue that in a lot of jukebox musicals, they lack substance sometimes, or they lack really hard-hitting, grounded storytelling. But at least they give us good representation. At least they give us something. They give us something. They give us choices, you know? So that's part of the reason why I'm so grateful that in Jersey Boys, they decided to right their wrongs and have a Black person playing Hal Miller. Because Hal Miller is a real living, breathing man. To this day, he's alive. I don't know where he is. You know, I would love to go have a cup of coffee with him. But he deserves respect. And he provided something that has trickled down into generations. And there's people even today singing his music. Ariana Grande is singing An Angel Cried somewhere right now in a concert. And there are so many people around the world, so many young people, so many non-Black young people who think Ariana Grande wrote that darn song and that she's the original singer of that darn song. And I'm sure it confuses them even more because I try to do her little run when I do it. I think that might not be helping. Little raindrops fell on the earth, but then you left me. I try to do that every night.
Titus, that's what Titus did on the cast recording.
Absolutely. So we also have to give credit to the amazing Titus Burgess. But that's one of the reasons why I'm so grateful and I'm so happy that they righted their wrongs and are back to having actual Black men playing the part, because there's a line in the show that Bob Gaudio says that he toured in his younger years with Jackie Wilson, who is an amazing Black artist. And without Jackie Wilson, there's so many people who we would not have today. And it just goes to show that, like so many other things in America especially, Black people were the originators. And Black people were the people who gave us something that could, I mean, take us generations and generations and generations, you know? And so it feels good. And I'm so grateful to God. I'm so grateful to Mary Sugarman and Michael Bello and Des McAnuff. I'm so grateful that they, and the producers and Dodgers, I'm so grateful that they made the decision to have me in this role and other Black people in the role on the seas and in the UK, because the representation is so important. It's very, very important. And it's not something at all that should be taken lightly. And the thing is, you could say, well, is it really that important? You know, you're only singing 30 seconds of An Angel Cried. It's important because Hal Miller lived a life that deserves to be shown. And if he gave anything to the atmosphere that Frankie soaked up in that moment, it's worth being shown, because too often Black people's artwork or their contribution to music, their contribution to rock and roll, their contribution to pop music is forgotten. So I'm so grateful. And I'm so happy. So that's why I kind of look at people with a side eye when they don't like Jukebox Musicals. Cause I'm like, mine is good. Jersey Boys is good. Exactly. So
this is history, man.
And Yannick right. also. Mm-hmm. And Yannick. And Yannick. Big time.
Absolutely.
So as the only Black person in the company mm-hmm. with no Black swing and no Black understudy, which mm-hmm. which I just realized there has never been a Black swing or a Black understudy. Do you feel pressure not to miss shows? Because if you don't go on, a white person's gonna go on.
I do not feel pressure, but it is absolutely a thing. It's absolutely, and I've said this to my cast members before, it's absolutely something that's on my mind. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely something on my mind. And especially when it comes to like my health, us being in a pandemic, you know, if we're all out, let's say for example, we're all outside and you know, we're all 6 feet apart and we're doing, you know, there's free flowing air and everything. Respectfully, if you all want to take your masks off, that's completely fine. No judgment. You're being safe. That's great. We're all vaccinated. We're all boosted. Amen. Go ahead. I definitely sometimes feel a little bit of like caution because I know that if I don't go on stage, that is a whole audience of thousands of people who will think that Black people did not contribute to this story. And did not contribute to Frankie's sound and Bob Gaudio's sound. And we absolutely did. Because frankly, it's not enough that Bob mentions Jackie Wilson. You know what I mean? It's not enough that Hal Miller's name is said. It's important. It's representation. You have to be seen. You know what I mean? So I appreciate you asking me that. I absolutely don't feel pressure, but it's there. I definitely know what would happen if I did not show up. And it's very, very important to me. But also I have to say, I'm an understudy. I understudy for Crew.
Right.
And I just went on. So
yes, you did. Yes, you did. You are one of three Black men to ever play Bob Crew.
Okay, so please tell me who else has done it?
It's really only been in the West End. So Tommy Earl Jenkins, who originated Barry Belson in the original West End cast, he went on for a handful of times over the years. And Jacob McIntosh, who is your current Barry Belson counterpart in the West End, he's been on a few times as Crew.
Wow. So are you saying I'm the first on the National Broadway tour to have done it?
You are the first person we believe you are the first person, you are the first Black person in the United States in a Dodgers production to play Bob Crew.
Absolute.
So what you're saying is I'm the bomb and that I need a plaque.
Exactly. You are the bomb.com.
dot edu.
Not .org.
Dot net.
Not .net. Okay, .net, not .gov.
Wow.
Never .gov.
That is a blessing. I have to say, I was told that the day after I did it by some cast members, they were like, I think you were. I wasn't so sure. Wow, that's amazing. Honest to God, to this day, I don't know why I was chosen to go on. I was just happy I was because our other swings were there.
Right.
So, I actually have no idea why I was chosen.
In the West End with Jacob, there was no one else. There was literally no one else. So there were a lot of dominoes falling into place. So he was the one and this is one of the questions that we have. They told him right before tech to start following the Crew track. So when did you start prepping for Crew?
Oh, that's a story.
Can you tell it?
Okay, yes, I can. So, they set me up to fail. This is not what you do to a perfectionist, okay? You don't do this to kids.
Perfection is not the goal, it's the obstacle.
Yes.
It's not the standard.
It's not the standard. Sorry. I'm so sorry. It's not the standard.
Let me tell you something. I, to this day, don't know where I got that quote from, but that quote, literally, it blesses me every day. It blesses me every day when I step off the stage. It blesses me when I have to do these terrible self-tapes. Perfection is not the standard. It is an obstacle. If you get over...
Hey guys, it's David.
And Gia.
Thank you so much for listening to part one with King. Make sure to check out part two, available on YouTube and anywhere you can find podcasts. A salute.